from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, a report on international religious freedom, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. This week, Family Research Council's Director of Partnerships, Sarah Perry, sat in for Tony as he switched roles and focused on his work as the chairman of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. The commission released its annual report on Tuesday, and Sarah had Tony join her to talk about it.
Tony, welcome back.
Well, Sarah, thank you, and thanks for filling in today so that I could wear my chairman hat with the USERF Commission. It's been a busy day as we rolled out the report, the annual report earlier today, and so a lot of attention focused on our recommendations to the administration, to the State Department, and to Congress on what we've found over the last year as it pertains to religious freedom.
So before we get into some of those specific findings, can you give those of us who are listening some sense of context? What is USERF? What's it designed to do?
A really good question. It was created by Congress 21 years ago for the purpose of focusing like a laser on religious freedom internationally. We are a 9-member bipartisan commission, meaning it's basically half. We have 5 Republicans at present, 4 Democrats. I was elected by those members to serve as chairman for this year. It's been amazing. I've enjoyed my interaction with all of my colleagues there. While we come from very different backgrounds politically and even from a religious and ethnic standpoint, we all work collectively on this issue of religious freedom. And so what we're tasked by Congress to do is to make an annual report on severe violations of religious freedom. And we work under the definition that was in the legislation, the International Religious Freedom Act, which says that we look at what's called particularly severe violations of religious freedom, meaning they're systematic, ongoing, and egregious violations. And so we measure countries according to that standard. And if all 3 are present, we then make a recommendation that they be listed as a country of particular concern. This year, 14 countries fell into that category. If 2 of the 3 indicators are there, systematic, ongoing, of egregious, 2 of those 3, then we, for the first time this year, have a special watch list. We recommended 15 countries for that list.
Now, you've just distinguished between the CPCs, those are countries of particular concern, and this category, SWL, special watch list. Is there any other distinction between those two that for you provided sort of a surprise this year? It seems to have been a helpful ability to divide those classifications of nations, but were any of those additions or subtractions surprising to you?
Not really, because we have most of these are repeats, although the big news, I think, in the positive news, is the fact of Sudan. Sudan, for actually ever since we began the commission, that is, began identifying CPCs 20 years ago, Sudan has been on that list because of the systematic, ongoing, egregious violations of religious freedom. Now, that was under the Islamic regime of al-Bashir, and having him being deposed and a transitional government now in place. In fact, I've met with the new Prime Minister Hamdok twice. In fact, was in Sudan, led a delegation there just a couple of months ago. They are pulling back some of the laws, well, the public order law that was used to repress the people with a very extreme view of Islamic law. And now they're in the process of repealing the apostasy and blasphemy laws, which would be huge because about 60 countries or more have those types of laws, which essentially keep people from changing their religion if they happen to be, in most cases, of the Islamic faith. So some very positive developments there in Sudan, very encouraged by what we're seeing there. And we made specific recommendations to the administration to continue to help One being their Department of Education, Minister of Education, working to revise all of the curriculum in their public schools to embrace more of a religious tolerance and not teach a single view of Islam. So we've asked the government to assist in that effort and a couple of other things as well that we see as needed in Sudan.
Well, speaking of making recommendations to the government, we have a clip of President Trump speaking at last year, September's UN Conference on Religious Freedom. Let's listen to what he says.
Today, I ask all nations to join us in this urgent moral duty. We ask the governments of the world to honor the eternal right of every person to follow their conscience, live by their faith, and give glory to God. The United States has a vital role in this critical mission.
Domestically, we really understand that this president has accomplished a great deal for the free exercise of religion. Is he as accomplished in the field of international religious liberty, and is he listening to the recommendations of USERF?
Without question. We've met with multiple countries. In fact, the commission took 11 trips to foreign countries. We met with other officials here in the United States, many of them wanting to meet with us to try to improve their record on religious freedom because it's a priority for this administration. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo multiple times has said that the number one foreign policy objective of this administration is international religious freedom. And so the evidence is there. The attention has been gained by this administration of other countries that want to come in line and protect or at least open the door in a new way. Not as, their view of religious freedom is a little different than what we have here in the United States, but they're moving in that direction. Last year, we briefed the White House, the Vice President, on the report, and I'm anticipating possibly this year briefing the president as well. So yes, they are listening. In fact, two of the recommendations we've made were put in place. One that was Sarah Macon was appointed to fill a spot that had never been filled before as I forget the exact title, but she works for the National Security Council, focused strictly on international religious freedom as an advisor to the president. And then we asked for a program to be created, money set aside to protect houses of worship and places, religious sites. And in fact, the president at that clip you just played, I was at the United Nations for that. He dedicated $25 million to that effort there on that day.
Now, you've talked about the fact that Sudan has really made great strides in beginning to change things slowly but surely. But one of the nations that's fallen, that might surprise some of our listeners because it is a democratic nation, is India. Can you indicate to us what a little bit of what's going on in terms of violations of free exercise there?
Yeah, India actually has been on our tier two list. What we had was a second tier list where those that we were watching until this year, we changed it to a watch list. They've been on that list since 2012 and have consistently been moving in the wrong direction. In fact, at the end of last year, they passed, in fact, it was in December of last year, they passed the Citizenship Amendment Act and approved a national population register. Now, this is only in one of the 28 states in India, in Assam, but what it's basically doing is keeping Muslims from being able to become citizens because they can't prove their citizenship. And that's about 7% of the population of Assam. And when you look at the entire country and the size of the entire country, the population, we could be talking about millions of people that could be left stateless if they follow through with this, and they say they are going to. And, of course, that's just one of many things. We see the government turning a blind eye to the attacks on religious minorities, continued enforcement of anti-conversion laws, and as I said, impunity for violence by non-state actors against religious minorities. So very troubling. But the idea there is that we are focused strictly on this issue of religious freedom. And so we bring this to the attention of the administration, encouraging them to include religious freedom in all of their discussions with these countries, including India.
Now, we live in very strange days. I don't think any of us anticipated that the beginning of 2020 would usher in a worldwide pandemic. Has the pandemic, the COVID pandemic, had any implication whatsoever about offenders of religious freedom? Has it had an impact?
Yeah, no question it has. I mean, I think just step back. Of course, we don't look at anything domestically, but if you look here domestically, it's also revealed those who have a tendency to abuse religious freedom or be restrictive toward it. We've seen that here in our own country. Well, the same is true internationally. This only brings the abusers to the forefront, and there have been multiple cases of that. We've spoken out against that. We'll continue to do so. And, of course, we are encouraging the administration with a number of recommendations, some specifically to the countries that we've identified, but others, some general overarching recommendations. But one is to be more aggressive in using individual sanctions for those who are identified as abusers. Mm. And under the Global Magnitsky Act, they can do that. This administration has shown they're not afraid to do that. They did it 8 times last year. And so we're hoping that they will use all the tools in their tool chest to strengthen and to uphold religious freedom. And that's what this is about. It's about every man, woman, and child having the ability to choose, to have the freedom to choose to follow or not to follow God.
Tony Perkins, chair of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. Always love talking to you. Coming up, sticking with the theme of today's program, we'll get an update on the USERF report's conclusions and recommendations on 3 particular nations, India, China, and North Korea. We'll be joined by FRC's assistant director of the Center for Religious Liberty, Ariel DiTurco, coming up next on Washington Watch.
Reading this spring. Check out FRCblog.com for the latest commentary on the issues facing our culture today. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts and other FRC staff, as well as outside contributors. Some of our latest posts include, "To abandon the nuclear family ideal is to abandon being human." "Why does the abortion industry hate women?" "China uses coronavirus to oppress religious minorities." Stand for truth by staying informed at FRCblog.com.
Welcome back to this special edition of Washington Watch. As we heard with Tony Perkins in the previous segment, USERF has released its 2020 annual report. Religious freedom is the goal of USERF, pushed across the world to keep those of all faiths safe and secure to worship. But in countries like India, China, and North Korea, there is not only no favoritism toward religious freedom, but outright hostility. It's considered a violation against the nation itself. So joining me now to talk about 3 of the worst offenders and about the report's conclusions and recommendations on these nations is FRC's Assistant Director for the Center for Religious Liberty, Ariel DiTurco. Ariel, welcome back.
So happy to be with you, Sarah.
So North Korea, we all know, is in the news quite a bit here lately after rumors have started to circulate that Kim Jong-un's sister, Kim Yo-jong, may assume his leadership. If the supreme leader is in a vegetative state or dead, we can't get a straight story out of a communist country, shock and awe. But as people ponder what happened to the country's leader, what do they need to know about the situation for religious freedom in North Korea?
Yeah, North Korea is not always in the news, Sarah, but North Korea always has among the world's worst, if not the worst, religious freedom situation. Christians there have no freedom at all. Any expression of faith will land you in a prison camp, and it could land your family in a prison camp as well, even something as simple as being caught with a Bible. Even when North Korean defectors who enter China and even manage to escape North Korea, if Chinese authorities catch them and send them back to North Korea, The two questions that they are asked by North Korean authorities are, firstly, did you encounter South Koreans when you were in China? And did you encounter Christianity? Did you meet any Christians? Mm. And if the answer is yes, they are going to be treated much more harshly in these prison camps. So this is something we've known about. This is not a new development. But the fact that it remains even in 2020 is a huge problem, and we need to be paying more attention to it than we already are.
Do you think, based on what you know about North Korea and the fact that this is really a dynasty, what we're doing is we're looking at a nation that rules not through a prime minister or through a president or just a dictator, but somebody who believes he is indeed deified. So based on that, do you think things are likely to be any different under the leadership of his sister, who is next in line?
Yeah, well, I think people can be very optimistic, but North Korea has a history of this, where we will be hopeful about new leadership. People were hopeful about Kim Jong-un, thinking, oh, he's young and he's studied in the West, but there's really no reason to be too hopeful. We're thinking that if Kim Jong-un does pass away, his sister may be put in charge, and she is also young, I think around 31, and she's also studied in the West. However, she's very loyal to the regime. She found a lot of favor with her father, Kim Jong-il, and her brother, Kim Jong-un, and presumably she's very popular with them because she's very loyal to the way that things are done in North Korea.
Now, the inclusion of India is new, and not everyone approves of it. Obviously, the election for Modi was a democratic referendum. Millions turned out to vote for him. By all accounts, it looks like this would be a nation in which the practice of any religious faith would be protected. But it sounds like it's fallen to a new low in terms of its violations of religious liberty. So let's talk a little bit about what the specific concerns are with India and why this year it was included on the CPC list.
Yeah, Indian leaders are always very defensive about their record on religious freedom, but really the religious freedom situation has deteriorated rapidly over the course of the last year, so they really don't have too much to argue with here. As Tony mentioned in the last segment, Indian laws have been going after religious minorities, specifically Muslims, but also there's been mounting mob violence from the ground up. And this mob violence is often inspired by the Hindu nationalist rhetoric of the current Hindu nationalist party that rules India, the BJP, and its Prime Minister Modi. And frankly, these leaders have not done enough to condemn these attacks. And sometimes their rhetoric even incites it, and they just look the other way when there are attacks in the name of their ideology.
Are individuals who are of minority religions in India, are they at greater risk than those in North Korea between the two of them? Because we have heard terrible evidence that's really sort of cast a shadow of horribles on both nations. Do you think there's hope for India yet?
I think there is hope for India, and that's because India is a democratic nation, unlike some of these authoritarian regimes that we're dealing with. What really needs to happen from India, because unfortunately they elected this BJP party that espouses Hindu nationalism, and they elected Modi, and he remains very popular, they really need to have a change of heart in India where religious tolerance is fostered from the ground up. It's not just laws that protect religious freedom, it's also the culture. So hopefully they can manage to improve the culture that just respects different religious beliefs and religious freedom.
We talk consistently about China here at FRC, and we understand that there are numerous religious freedom problems, including against Christians and against minority Uyghur Muslims. What does the USERF report specifically have to say about China, and why do we in the U.S. need to care about it?
Well, China also is a nation that has had a deteriorating religious freedom situation even in the last year. We saw in December where China gave a 9-year prison sentence to Pastor Wang Yi, who ran a very large house church, which means it's a church not registered with the Chinese government because they didn't want to teach everything the Chinese Communist Party handed them to teach. And they handed him a 9-year prison sentence, really for his faith. And that's a signal to those of us who track religious freedom that they're digging in their heels on this issue and things are not improving there. As you mentioned, they have An estimated, the most conservative estimate is 1.8 million Uyghur Muslims in these detention camps. And they're detained and brainwashed and taught Chinese communist propaganda. Things are really not getting better there. And because China is a nation that wants to seek global influence, we really need to care about what's happening there and what they're teaching the rest of the world.
Ariel DiTurco has been my guest. Coming up, these are not the only three bad state actors on the list from USERF. In fact, we'll hear from FRC's Senior Fellow for International Religious Freedom, Layla Gilbert, next about USERF's conclusions and recommendations on Nigeria and Iran. We'll be right back after this on Washington Watch.
This is Tony Perkins, host of Washington Watch and president of the Family Research Council in Washington. America is in the midst of a national crisis as the coronavirus is spreading across the nation, causing state and federal leaders to take unprecedented actions. Folks, the threat is real. Do your part in slowing the spread. Following the guidance for social distancing, personal hygiene, and limits on public gatherings. And those public gatherings include churches. While we might be tempted to see this as an obstacle to ministry, if we look at it right, it can be an opportunity to minister. We have a great resource site for pastors and churches, the latest on COVID-19, but also creative ideas on how to continue to minister to your church and your community outside the box, the four walls of the church. Go to frc.org/church. That's frc.org/church.
Welcome back to this special edition of Washington Watch on April 28th, 2020. We have heard of ongoing persecution in various nations, and today we're talking about the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom's 2020 annual report that was released today. The faithful in China, India, and North Korea aren't the only ones that are experiencing human rights violations and persecution. Joining me now to help break it down is FRC's Senior Fellow for International Religious Freedom, Layla Gilbert. Layla, welcome back.
Thank you, Sarah. It's nice to talk to you again.
Now, you have written extensively on Nigeria, and I was surprised, I think, based on our discussions previously, that this was such a massive source of persecution of Christians in particular. And you and I have talked that some of the most recent attacks in Nigeria, which is the biggest country in Africa, are coming from the Fulani tribe. Can you explain a little bit about how the ethnic infighting and some of these tribes have contributed to an incredibly hostile atmosphere?
The Fulani tribe is a very large tribe, not only in Nigeria, but in several other countries as well. And they are Muslim. And what we are looking at in Nigeria is really what appear to be jihadi attacks by these tribesmen. And it's very controversial because in some places in the news, this is attributed to climate change. And others are seeing it as anti-Christian massacres. And so, you know, I guess the question is, if they're herdsmen who are looking for pasture land, why are they massacring entire villages and burning the buildings down? It's a very tricky business, and it's hard for some of us who are watching it to not see it as being sort of glossed over by other excuses. But they're crying out Allahu Akbar when they kill, and that's sort of a giveaway.
Tell me now about another group, which is a name that we will recognize from the news, Boko Haram. And this was my first familiarity with what was going on in Nigeria. What is their relationship to the discourse and the discord there in Nigeria?
Well, they're certainly the best known group. And we remember them from the Bring Back Our Girls campaign that Michelle Obama launched back in 2014. They are the most violent group, and part of that group at least has signed on as going along with the Islamic State. They've given their respect to them or their loyalty to them. So they're of the same mind. We know what Islamic State is all about based on the Middle East and elsewhere. So they are very violent. They love to make videos now of beheadings. And they go into villages. It's the same pattern. They go into these poor villages, and they come in the middle of the night or darkness, during darkness, and they just start slaughtering. They kill the men. They take the women. They rape the women. They take the young women and the young girls and boys, kidnap them, and hold them for ransom or whatever, put them into slavery mode. They're very violent, and you know, there hasn't been much done about either of these groups in Nigeria, which is a big problem for us. You know, why hasn't the government there done more? And this is why we keep bringing it up, because it's getting worse. It's not getting better.
Now, one of those girls was Leah Sheribu, who's been adopted by Tony Perkins as his individual prisoner of conference. She was the first time I really began to pay attention to what was taking place in Nigeria. And she is, as far as we know now, enslaved with a baby. But she's really put a fine point on the fact that there are individual girls here who were taken. That was part of that Bring Back Our Girls campaign in 2014. But I want to shift course here, and I want to talk a little bit about Iran. And the government there is operated under a radical form of Shiite Islam, again, with particular animosity toward Christians. How is their involvement there in Iran really putting the safety and the viability of that Christian community at risk?
Well, there are a couple of Christian communities that you have to think about when you think about Iran, because there are old churches like the Armenian Church and the Assyrian Church, Chaldean churches, that are, if they say everything in their own languages, they operate without too much of a problem with the government. But the biggest problem is with converts from Islam, and there are many, and they are young and vibrant Christian people who have house churches, and they are the ones that are getting targeted. And we don't know how many, because we can't, but they are so alive. And you know, our sort of poster girl, Mary Mohammadi, is a good example of this. She's 21 years old. She is absolutely fearless. She's been badly abused in prison, and she's now facing another sentencing. She's been sentenced to 3 months and stripes, in other words, flogging. And she's going right on with her testimony very bravely. We need to pray for her.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.